This is the official Euro 2024 podcast.
Portugal have reached the Euro 2024 quarterfinals thanks to a dramatic penalty shootout win.
Diogo Costa remarkably saved all three spot kicks he faced to knock Slovenia out.
So next up for Portugal are France after they saw off Belgium.
Kolomouani, it's in! France have the lead with 5 minutes left to play.
A late own goal by Yann Vertonghen was enough to send Les Bleus into the last eight.
And we'll look ahead to the final last 16 ties, Romania, Netherlands and Austria against Turkey. Hello, welcome to the Euro Show. Chris, amazing scenes here as Ronaldo, so at the centre of the drama, is being hugged by his teammates, a relieved bunch of Portugal players out there tonight.
They certainly are, and he's just gone over to the main man tonight, Diogo Costa, who we've seen for Porto many times save a penalty, but tonight he saved three in a row. I'm not sure that has ever happened before at a Euro, and it is the Portugal players taking the adulation of their supporters, but I would almost suggest as powerful are the images at the other end of the stadium in Frankfurt, where the Slovenian players are rather trudging towards a very proud group of fans. This would have been their first ever trip to a quarterfinal as an independent nation. Boy, they were close, but in the end, the penalties belonged to Portugal. But what an extra time we had before that. So much drama, so late on.
European football expert Kevin Hatchard is with us on the show as well. And Kev, really, we'll probably take the analysis from the 90-minute mark onwards.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think, in general, Slovenia did an incredible job. One of the things that's characterised their Euro is their organisation, their willingness to work for each other, their incredible defensive ability. And we saw that in this game. And to have the physical ability to carry that on into extra time and make chances to win it as well, which they weren't quite able to take. That was a phenomenal effort from them, but it's Portugal to go through.
That noise in the background is the Slovenia supporters mostly. 7,000 got tickets and they are making a right old din as their players, all of them and the coaching staff, are kind of stood in silence, many actually in tears. Some kind of looking rather forlornly just into the distance, applauding. But they are getting a hero's reception. I think those Slovenia supporters inside this stadium in Frankfurt know what they've witnessed. And then at the other end, kind of tears of relief from Cristiano Ronaldo, who was in tears himself early on in the night after missing a penalty. And Roberto Martinez has just given Diogo Costa the biggest, firmest hug he probably ever will. What a goalkeeping display.
Extraordinary. Okay, plenty more to come on this game. And a reminder as well, it finished 0-0 on the night before the penalty shootouts late into the evening in Frankfurt. Earlier in the day, France beat Belgium by 1-0. And we will discuss that match in detail, of course, too. If you want to get in touch, do so on X at Euro 2024. And a reminder, we're live every night to the competition, or you can listen to the show as the official Euro 2024 podcast. So, Portugal versus Slovenia. And in truth, there was nothing between the two sides after 90 minutes. And that took the tie into extra time. Right at the end of the first half of that extra time, Vanya Drukšić brought down Diogo Jota inside the penalty area.
And it was Cristiano Ronaldo, of all people, who stepped up to take the kick from the spot.
Ronaldo! Oblak saves it! And it's a remarkable stop! He always gets the headlines, Ronaldo! But this one does not belong to him!
And to add to the drama and the theatre of the whole spectacle, Ronaldo breaking down at tears during the halftime huddle in extra time. He looked inconsolable as his players tried to get his head back in the match. Then a mistake at the back by Portugal, and Benjamin Šeško into the second half of extra time went through 1-1.
Oh, Pepe's made a mess of it. He's presented it to Šeško. Here's the moment, and Diogo Costa stops it. Oh, my word.
All this happened in the space of about 5 or 10 minutes. So we went to penalties. Costa's three saves in a row meant it fell to Bernardo Silva to complete the job for Portugal and send them into the quarterfinals.
Bernardo Silva entrusted to get the job done, which he does, and Portugal advance to the quarterfinals.
And we can still see a relatively emotional-looking Ronaldo doing a lap of the pitch. He was being hugged by Roberto Martinez. And crucially as well, Kev, after that first kick was saved by Diogo Costa, Slovenia won the toss, went first. Ilicic denied from the spot. Ronaldo stepped up.
Yeah, he did. And he was always going to, because this is what he's done his whole career. He's kind of met those challenges. He's been willing to take that pressure on his shoulders. He was emotional from the get-go. You could see he was really pumped up for this. You could see that he wanted to take that responsibility. And Portugal, for a lot of the 90 minutes, did look strong, did look as though they were going to find a way to break Slovenia down. But every time they found some space, there was a Slovenian defender there. And every time they got past the rear guard, Jan Oblak was there. He was sensational on the night. But it was another goalkeeper that took the plaudits in the end.
Yeah, we're all saying as they went towards the penalty kicks, Jan Oblak and Diogo Costa, two of the best goalkeepers in European club football and international football, probably in the last five or so years. Oblak was not able to get close, really, to any of the Portuguese penalties. Ronaldo's was excellent. He went the other way that he'd gone in normal time, Kev. Bruno Fernandes then scored a really cute penalty, and then, as we heard, Bernardo Silva managed to get the job done. So talk about poise and quality and skill in those defining moments from three very experienced Portuguese players.
Yeah, and skill's the word, because one of the things I never agree with when we talk about football is when people describe penalties as a lottery. It's not. It's a perfect microcosm of what the game's all about. It's all about composure, under pressure. It's all about quality. It's all about technique. And it's all about that ability to read what your opponent's going to do. I thought Jan Oblak, the closest he got to was actually Ronaldo's penalty. He read it. He read the stutter. He read what he was going to do. But because it was right in the corner, he just couldn't quite get there. But I think Slovenia globally will look back on this. And yes, they had their moments. They had chances to score that goal. Šeško, I think, will ruminate on that moment for a long, long time when he was cleaned through. And Diogo Costa made an excellent save. He had another opportunity actually before that in normal time where he managed to break away from Pepe and couldn't quite hit the target on that occasion. But they must look back on this with immense pride, because they came into this with not a huge amount of expectation in a tricky section. And I thought they did a wonderful job in each and every game. They play in quite an old school way with that 4-4-2. They've got a strike partnership that works together really strongly. The goalkeeper is outstanding. I actually think their best player of the whole tournament was the centre-back, Jakub Jor. He was incredible at the heart of that defence in each and every game, but especially in this game. Brilliant in the air, really determined on the ground as well. There's a real rising star there.
7,000 Slovenians in the stadium, we understand, to witness their team nearly make history. Portugal, meanwhile, going back to the team selection from Roberto Martinez, he switched, doesn't he, between three and four at the back of this tournament. It was 4-3-3 this time. And I think the consensus, when you were looking at people who cover Portuguese football online, pundits talking about it, was this was the formation that made the most sense given the profile of play that Portugal have. How do you reflect, Chris, on how they went about the game and the difficulties that they had in breaking down Slovenia?
Well, I think it's worth saying that Slovenia have been knocked out of Euro without losing a game, which is tough on them. I can't remember such a well-drilled unit. Only conceded a couple of matches, kept England and now Portugal in successive matches without scoring. And I think they knew they were going to have most of the ball, but actually Jan Oblak wasn't that busy. He made the incredible save from Ronaldo's penalty. He had another couple of nearly moments, one from Ronaldo again right at the end of normal time. But it wasn't as if he was making save left, right and centre. And I think the structure of Slovenia's defence, Kev, and that starts at the front with the two strikers, meant that you could see why Roberto Martinez picked that team. But actually, Slovenia were really difficult to break through and break down.
Yeah, and it's those two banks of four. The front two work incredibly hard without the ball. Čerin and Elšnik at the heart of midfield are a lovely pairing because they've got that ability without the ball to kind of close off the passing lanes, make it difficult. But when they get on the ball, they're quite neat and tidy with it as well. One player I felt Slovenia missed a little bit going forward was Erik Janja, because I think he's been sensational for them at left back. And what they couldn't quite do was pin João Cancelo back as much as I think they would have liked to have. They would have liked to have got him running back towards his own goal a bit more. But every time Portugal seemed to have an overload, Slovenia managed to shut it down. So sometimes in tournament football that happens. You come up against a really stubborn team that knows the job. I think the coach, Matias Kek, has done a brilliant job in drilling them in terms of everybody knowing their job, but the blend is right as well in terms of they've got a nice bit of flair in there, but they've also got great organisation. He's been very loyal to his players as well, and he's given them a little bit of leeway if they haven't quite performed so well in certain games. I think they've been stellar. Portugal have been made to really work, but sometimes when you come through a test like that, it can actually steal you for what's to come.
You could see that emotion at the end, actually, from the Portugal players. Maybe a unifying moment as well, just to give them that extra zip ahead of what is going to be a very interesting quarterfinal. We'll get onto that shortly. Rob, Diego Costa, I mentioned at the top of his record of saving penalties. 10 in his career before tonight, all for Porto. 3 in one single Champions League season. So from 42 penalties faced now, he has saved 13 spot kicks, which is pretty good going.
Yeah, and Diogo Costa is the focus of much of your praise this evening on X. Miguel says he deserves this moment. Coco says goalkeeper of the tournament. Peter, maybe Schmeichel, but just Peter, simply says masterclass. A reminder, Portugal will face France on the 5th of July, some quarterfinal, yep, at 9 p.m. kickoff local time, and a repeat of the Paris final of 2016, which Portugal won. Okay, next on the show, speaking of France, we'll get to their tie in the round of 16.
A cardiac arrest can happen to anyone, on a football pitch, at work, but most often at home.
CPR can save lives.
Get trained now.
Learn the skills to save lives. Visit get-train.com.
This was the sound of the Belgian fans this afternoon as they marched towards the Dusseldorf Arena for a meeting with near neighbours France. And in the match itself, there was late drama.
Kolomouani, it's in! France have the lead with 5 minutes left to play. Randall Kolomouani's hit. France are through to the quarterfinals. They have managed to see off their old enemies in a very tight affair.
Yes, France 1-0 winners over Belgium. Jan Vertonghen's own goal, the difference. Les Bleus edging out a tight game in Düsseldorf.
They certainly did. Well, we heard from him last night, and delighted to say the France reporter Alex Clemenson is back on the show, live from the stadium. Good evening, Alex.
Good evening. How are you all?
Very good. How are you after that? And how happy were the French players you spoke to after they secured their quarterfinal spot?
Yeah, there was a lot of joy. Obviously, I think it's a completely alien feeling, a completely strange feeling to win a game in such dramatic circumstances late on after not having that many clear-cut chances. I mean, they dominated the game without carving out opportunities that you would call gilt-edged, but scoring in the final 5 minutes, yeah, that's something that they can take with them onto the quarterfinals.
How important was the introduction of Randall Kolomouani?
Yeah, massive. Obviously, it was him that instigated the winner. I think the majority of us thought it was him that scored, but it's been deemed as an own goal for Vertonghen. But he was a physical presence up top. I mean, he moved the ball around, he moved the defenders, which I think is vital in the final exchanges of a game. So yeah, he definitely had an impact. That's what Deschamps would have wanted from him, and he got his due rewards.
I've seen a fair amount in the French media kind of concentrating on maybe the lack of goals that France have scored, but equally, how impressive has their defensive solidity been, not just tonight, but I guess throughout the whole tournament now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's four games now in this tournament. They've only conceded one goal, and that one goal came from the penalty spot. I think this has been sort of a feature of the French team for a number of years now, having those solid foundations at the back that allow your front players to flourish. I mean, obviously, it's not been quite that way so far this tournament, but Saliba has come into this tournament, his first tournament as starting at centre-half. He's been a breath of fresh air. He's been incredibly composed, incredibly calm on the ball, a rock. So is Upamecano and Jules Koundé, man of the match today. He was incredible. That was something that's not really normally a feature of his play, getting up and down that right flank. Normally, he's a bit more of a reliable presence, allowing Hernandez to bomb up and down the left flank. But no, Koundé, a well-deserved man of the match award for him. But yeah, it's a positive sign for France.
And Jerome Rabiot picked up a yellow card and will be suspended for the next game. Who do you see coming into midfield to replace him?
Probably initially, I think most people will expect France to revert back to that 4-3-3 that served them so well during the 2022 World Cup. That would allow Antoine Griezmann to drop back a little bit, back into that role that he first sort of found himself in during that tournament in Qatar. I think that would allow space for maybe Ousmane Dembele to come back into the side, add a little pace, add a little bit of directness, inject a little bit of energy into the side. Obviously, no defender wants to come up against Ousmane Dembele. He was a constant threat against Poland. It's been a constant threat throughout those three games. But it could be time to change the formation back to 4-3-3. Adrien Rabiot is a key player for France. He has so much energy, so much calmness on the ball. There's a huge physical presence as well, great athleticism. So he will be a miss. But this is what Deschamps is renowned for, changing it.
All of those names you mentioned there. Frightening squad that France have. Alex, thank you for coming on and enjoy, well, I guess a couple of days off before you really ramp up for that last eight fixture.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Our France reporter, Alex Clemenson there. And France next up against Portugal. That's a lovely little tie.
Well, N'Golo Kanté will be looking to preserve this remarkable record. He has now gone on the longest unbeaten run by any European player in major tournament history. World Cup and games at Euro. He's not lost any of the 19 he's played in. So we'll see who he plays alongside in midfield. It was good to get Alex's thoughts on that. Kev Hatchard with us on the Euro show tonight. Kev, you feel France are still making chances despite the fact that they haven't had a player themselves score from open play. It's two own goals and a penalty that they've scored.
Yeah, the temptation is to look at that and think it's all doom and gloom, but I don't see it that way. I think there's a real fluidity about what they're doing still. I still think they're making opportunities in every single game. It's just been that clinical edge in front of goal that's maybe been a bit missing, some shots wide, some shots high, but I think that will click. I'd be more worried about them if they weren't making any chances. They've been strong defensively and the work rate has been there, which is an absolute guarantee for a Didier Deschamps team. And you look at the ability to change it, and we saw in this game, Rondal Colomouani comes on, scores the goal, really sensible bit of play at the end as well, where he raced into the Belgian half, won the free kick, and that was game over. So, yeah, really excellent side.
And Kylian Mbappe playing with this mask. He had a couple of very bright moments. There was one run in particular where you thought, if he finishes this, even in this tournament, we might be talking about the goal of this Euro.
Yeah, there was some unbelievable bursts of acceleration. Yeah, and sometimes he'll do a trick and you can barely work out what he's actually done, and he'll leave the defender trailing in his wake. But Didier Deschamps talked about it afterwards, the mask that he's still
it's
having to wear.
It's quite a bit
wear.
Of kit, isn't it? I mean, it's got this kind of thing to tighten it at the back. It's a lot to wear, really.
And he's talked about that he doesn't like wearing it, and that he sweats in it, and that's a real issue. That distracts him. And he said, but look, he's going to have to get used to it, because for the next few weeks, maybe the next few months, that's what he's going to have to wear to protect the nose. So, you know, I think Kylian Mbappe even wearing a mask is better than most players without a mask,
probably,
to be honest.
We saw Lois Openda start there. It was interesting. Tactically, from Domenico Tedesco, went 4-4-2. And there were moments, and De Bruyne had his chances, and he was creating. And but ultimately, it ends in elimination. Domenico Tedesco was given a new contract back in March to the next World Cup. So what does he do to take this team forward, Kev? Because we know the reality. Someone like Jan Vertonghen in his late 30s now, some of these players might not necessarily play for their country again.
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge. He's got some good young defenders coming through, and it's going to be about giving them a little bit more time, a little bit more experience. Guys like De Bast, and we've seen De Winter start to come through. So they've got young guys in that regard. I think Lois Openda is a really exciting forward. And I think it was really interesting that he did pair him with Lukaku. I think the issue they had was that Kevin De Bruyne was a bit too far away from the pair of them for much of the game. And it was when he got forward a bit and Mangala came on that they started to create a few more opportunities. But Jeremy Doku, I think, had an impressive tournament. And I think working for Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, he's going to get better and better and better. Charlotte de Ketelaere has just had a great season for Atalanta, won the UEFA Europa League. I think he's got a lot to give. So the talent is there. And I think maybe, whereas maybe the previous generation of those superstars kind of had that golden generation tag that was a bit tough to deal with, I think maybe some of these younger players will be able to develop in a bit more peace. I think Tedesco is very good at that, developing those young players. I think he's a really good coach for that kind of role. So I still think the future's bright for them. I didn't think they played particularly badly against France, but they ran into a side that doesn't have obvious weaknesses. And when Maignan had to make big saves, he did it again. I think he's been terrific, actually, Mike Maignan. He made a very unorthodox save from a Kevin De Bruyne free kick, but it actually takes a deflection off the wall. He has to adjust and kicks that ball away, which reminded me of my erratic five-a-side performances. So I'm never going to have a problem with that, a goalkeeper saving with their feet. So I think he's been terrific for them. But Belgium will look at that and be disappointed. But there were positives to take.
And they had that chance just before the goal when Kevin De Bruyne let fly from distance again. And the aforementioned Maignan made another good save. And that really was probably the 60, 90 seconds where the game swung.
Yeah, so France versus Portugal, an A-list quarter final tie. A reminder, Friday the 5th of July. And of course, we'll be live afterwards to give you analysis to that game as well in the quarter finals. We'll preview the final two round of 16 matches shortly. But first, here are some of the stories you may have missed elsewhere at Euro 2024 today. Jordan Pickford has called on England fans to keep believing in the team as they look to claim a first Euro title. The goalkeeper spoke to the media today ahead of England's game with Switzerland on Saturday.
I think you've got to show resilience, you've got to show character, and we've just got to keep fighting, believing, and train hard, get the game plan right, and come Saturday against a tough opponent, hopefully we're the better side.
England edged past Slovakia in extra time on Sunday, a game watched by a peak of over 18 million people back home on TV. Euro fever's been sweeping Spain as well. Their victory over Georgia was seen by 9 million viewers, the biggest TV audience for any match this season.
Yes, and La Roja are back in action again on Friday. Germany's David Raum is relishing the chance to face his Leipzig teammate Dani Olmo. So is he expecting a message from him before kickoff in Stuttgart?
I blocked him. No. No. Yeah, he's a very good friend of mine. We like each other. We play on the same side in the club. I love to play with him. Now I play against him. Yeah, he's an amazing football player. Amazing skills. And it's hard to stop him. But I think I have some ideas how I can stop him or how my teammates can stop him.
Okay, let's preview the tournament's final two round of 16 ties next. We'll come to Austria versus Turkey shortly, but first to Munich, where yellow meets orange, Romania face the Netherlands.
Chance. Weghorst! What an introduction! Weghorst! has eased the Netherlands in front. Simons, Gakpo's available. This is Cody Gakpo! In an orange flash, the Dutch are level.
Well, the Netherlands finished third in their group in the end behind Austria and France. Their win over Poland proved crucial to qualify, and we'll come to them shortly. But first, let's focus on Romania. Group winners, remember, ahead of Belgium, Slovakia and Ukraine. Let's speak to someone who's brought us brilliant insights into this Romanian camp throughout the tournament, and it's our reporter Cristina Tacchia. Good evening, Cristina.
Good evening again. Good evening, everyone, from München again.
Yeah, you're back in Munich, and we want to get your thoughts on the squad and everything. But first of all, can you tell our listeners how big this game is in Romania's football history?
It's huge. It's like a historical one. It's like, I don't know, I think it's the biggest match that we ever had in 20 years or something. It's like with high expectations, and it's huge, huge.
How do you sense the players and the coach are feeling, given you've been speaking to them, not just ahead of this match, but throughout this tournament in Germany?
Well, they were confident from the beginning, but especially these days after they qualified, I stayed with them, like filming and interviewing them at the base camp in Würzburg. And I noticed that the last two trainings of Mr. Iordanescu were tougher trainings, and he was much more like working with them on not only speed and aerial shots and stuff like that, duels, but also on their fears. Like, I saw a match between the players, like they were, I don't know, fearful. And I said, okay, if they are going to be like this tomorrow, maybe we really have a chance. So their mood is very good, their mental is very, very healthy now. They are very keen on showing everything on pitch. And each of the players that I interviewed these days said to me, like, we want to win. We want to give our best and hope that we have this chance because it's up to us. So they are very, very determined.
Yeah, they seem like a motivated group of players going into this match. One player you spoke to earlier was midfielder Razvan Marin, who shared his thoughts before the game.
Razvan, nervous about facing Netherlands tomorrow? Romania is going home or going to the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I think I'm more excited about it than nervous. So I wish and I hope after the 90 minutes or after the extra time or after the penalty shoot to be qualified for the quarterfinals.
Mr. Iordanescu published today a very interesting message. He said that it is all up to you from this moment if you want to continue or want to go home. How did you receive this message?
Yeah, I saw also the message, and I think everyone wants to continue. I think nobody wants to go home. We already talked between us, and to be honest, really nobody wants to go back home. And yeah, we're ready, and we need to show it on the pitch.
So tomorrow, expecting a win?
Yeah, tomorrow, how I said it, we're ready. We prepared it really well, the game. And you never know. Holland, it's a tough team. They have really good players that are playing in the top level. But we have also our qualities. We know what we have to do. And I'm sure that we can win this game.
Romanian midfielder Razvan Marin speaking to Cristina Tacchia, our reporter who's with us on the Euro show this evening. In terms of the team news, I know he's declared himself fit for the game. Cristina, what can you tell us about the potential team selection?
Yeah, there's going to be some changes for sure, because you know that Banku can't play on this match. And also, I know for sure that Coach Iordanescu has a strategy with the players. They want to keep, he want to keep them like on their toes until 2 hours before the match. They will know for sure 2 hours before the match who will play, who will start. So kind of surprising for everyone. But for sure, he's going to make some changes tomorrow.
That is really interesting, actually. And just finally, Cristina, Munich was where Romania started against Ukraine. You told us before that match about how good the fans were going to be and that there was going to be a fan march. What sort of colour are we expecting in Bavaria for this game from the Romanian supporters?
As far as I know, they're expecting like 40,000 Romanian fans again on Munich Arena. So I think it's going to be like a battle between the yellows and the oranges on the Munich Arena. But my guess is that the Romanians are going to be like numerous ones. So we're expecting a spectacle.
We can't wait for it, Christina. Thanks. Brilliant insight as always. And we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much. Have a nice evening.
Our Romania reporter Christina Tachia there. They take on a Dutch side, Kev Hatchard, that did beat Poland in that group opener and lost their last game against Austria 3-2, a thrilling match. What have you made of their performances so far?
Yeah, I think we've seen good spells in all three games, but what they haven't produced yet, and Ronald Koeman's been quite open about this, the Dutch coach, is we haven't seen a full 90-minute performance, and certainly he felt that against Austria, they were below the level they expected themselves. I think they struggled defensively, which is a bit of a surprise when you think of the quality they have at the back. However, what we do know is that they have quality all the way through the team. You look at some of the defenders they've got. Nathan Ake, I think, is a super player. I think he's really gone up a few levels at Manchester City. Virgil van Dijk, we know about his quality, one of the best centre-backs in the world. And then what's really interesting about them is how the front three is going to be, because I think Cody Gakpo has been excellent in this tournament so far. I'll be really interested to see if he decides to use Jeremy Frimpong. I think he is in great form, carrying on from helping Bayer Leverkusen.
But you mean in attack, right?
Yeah, I mean in attack. So Ronald Koeman's always said about Frimpong publicly, defensively, I'm not sure about him. So his solution was, okay, well, we'll play him as a winger. So I think Denzel Dumfries is a more all-round performer in that right wing back role. But the way the Dutch line up, you could use Frimpong out wide. The reason that could be relevant, I think, is Nico Șurbancu, who is the first choice left back for Romania, is suspended. So they can go one or two ways. They can either bring somebody in to replace him from outside, or they might bring Andre Ratiu across from right back to try and cover that and try and cover Frimpong that way, if that's the way he goes. He's got lots of options, Koeman, in attack. I think they will probably go for speed and mobility over a big, strong link-up player like Val Veghorst, because if you look at the way Romania have defended, aerially, they've been outrageously good. Radu Dragușin, the Spurs defender, has been, for me, one of the centre-backs of the tournament so far. Alongside Andrei Burca, they've worked really well defensively. But I think the one thing you can do is try and get around them and try and get some speed and some movement to try and unsettle them.
Well, Ronald Koeman said before this one, not much is going to change. There's no reason for that either, which you would imagine means that Cody Gakpo will certainly be one of their starters. And earlier, he spoke with our reporter, Derek Brookman.
Cody, what's the focus been on training since the Austria game?
Yeah, I think we just analysed the game against Austria, and then there were some points that we could improve, for example, in the pressing. Those kind of points were the topics in training, and that's what we worked on.
I mean, for you, so it will be a week since the previous game. I mean, that's quite rare for you during a season. How have you coped with it personally?
Yeah, normally it's a little bit shorter, but yeah, I think we just trained pretty hard some days, so that's also good to stay in the rhythm and to stay fit. So yeah, it was okay. So, but you know, you're just waiting on the game to come. So.
And I'm assuming you've analysed, or you're still analysing, your opponent. What kind of game are you expecting?
Obviously, they are a tough opponent with good qualities in front as well. Some dribbling players as well. Good steady midfield. Defensively also very sharp, very, you know, in the duels, very strong. So it's gonna be a tough game, and we have to be ready for that as well.
Andrei Ratiu, if I say it correctly, could possibly be your direct opponent. What do you know about him?
If I'm correct, he has blue hair.
He has blue hair.
So that's what I know. No, I saw some games. Very good player, to be honest, on the bar as well. Even in the last game, I saw him a few times shooting on goal, you know, coming from the middle as well, dribbling, a good technique, good offensive right back. And also defensively looked really strong and for us, so also for me, what I said for the whole team, is going to be a tough game, and for me as well. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Cody Gakpo there, he's definitely done his homework. I thought that was actually fascinating. You know, there's a lot of players that he's going to potentially come up against and how much he knew of potentially his direct opponent. Rob, all players reportedly fit for the Netherlands ahead of this game. The match in Munich kicks off at 6 p.m. local time.
OK, still to come, we'll look ahead to the last round of 16 match of Euro 2024, Austria versus Turkey.
Few major competitions do more than the Euros to ensure their benefits last far beyond the final tournament. Since 2004, our hat-trick programme has been distributing two-thirds of every Euro's net revenue across Europe's 55 football associations to fund development projects. These benefits touch every level of the football pyramid. In communities, it pays for mini-pitches, grassroots club development, football in schools and disability football projects. At the top, Hattrick has helped associations build more than 60 stadiums and training centres. Euro 2024 will build on more than 800 projects already delivered over 20 years of Hattrick. Over the next 4 years, 935 million euros of the tournament's revenue will help leave a lasting legacy across the continent.
Okay, to Leipzig next for the last round of 16 tyres. Two teams that have been labelled as potential dark horses do battle.
Brilliantly finished by Marko Arnautovic. Szczesny given no chance. Big occasions demand big players. And Marko Arnautovic does it time and time again. Sabitzer's in. Marcel Sabitzer!
Here. And a shot blasted high into the roof of the net. Matt Mulder with a blockbuster of a goal for Turkey, who are up and running at Euro 2024.
Brilliant finish. Cenk Tosun, listen to the noise. And listen to the reception for Cenk Tosun.
Let's start with Austria, who did really well, Kev, to finish where they finished in their group.
I thought they were exceptional. And I think what we've seen is everything that Ralf Rangnick has laid out. You know, the football that he's built over his coaching career has been there for all to see. High energy, high press. Everybody's on the same page. They all know their jobs. He's been willing to make changes if necessary. He's been quite bold with some of his team selections. Certainly in the last game against the Dutch, I thought it was really interesting the way he went. And he's maximising the potential of every single player. You don't look at it and think, oh, he's well below the level. You don't see that at all. And the guys who've had to come in to replace some of the injured players have really deputised well. You've got to remember, first-choice goalkeeper out, Alexander Schlager, David Alaba, who's one of the great Austrian players, certainly of modern times, he's been missing. Ksava Schlager, who's, if you wanted to build a Rangnick player in midfield, you'd probably come up with him, but he's been missing as well. And Sasha Kalajic, who's such a focal point in attack, but he's had another serious injury. So they've coped with all that really well.
Ralf Rangnick back in Leipzig, where he had such success with RB Leipzig. I guess, Kev, people coming into the tournament kind of started talking about Austria because of some of those friendly wins, one of which in March was against Turkey when they won 6-1. So I guess a double question, how did they do it? And will that result have any kind of implication on what we might see tomorrow night?
I think it does have an implication because the way they did it is all of the things I was just talking about, in the sense that they pressed Turkey and Turkey found it really difficult to get out. And so they were forced to turn over the ball in their own half. That then led to lots of situations where Austria created chances and they were ruthless in front of goal. So Austria will go into that thinking, well, if we do exactly what we did then, that's a recipe for success. I think as well, and I know we're going to come on to Turkey in a bit more detail shortly, But I think Hakan Çalhanoğlu being missing for them in their midfield is huge, because he's the kind of guy that can get his foot on the ball, play through those waves of pressure and get them up the pitch. Without him, that becomes a lot more difficult. So Austria will take great comfort from having had that performance.
Patrick Wimmer, who started on the wing in the win over the Dutch, is suspended for the game. And we've known for some time that Gernot Trauner, mm-hmm. key central defender, is unavailable. Christoph Baumgartner started on the bench in that game, having been a starting role. We'll see if he comes back in. And he is one of those back in the stadium where he plays his club football. He's been catching up with our reporter, James Thorogood.
Christoph, a big game ahead today. What's the mood like in camp?
Yeah, we are really looking forward to the game. We know it's going to be a tough one. We have to give everything we have, but we are pretty confident that we will win this game. We just took some days to relax, and now we are back in full focus.
And for you, return to Leipzig, but this is a second home for many Austrian players. But what's it like to have this big moment ahead in your home stadium?
Yeah, it's definitely something special. Coming home, coming to the stadium you play the most games in over the year, it feels good. I'm really happy. A lot of people are coming. My family, some friends, also people from Leipzig here. So I'm really looking forward to this game.
And what would it mean for Austria to win tomorrow and reach the quarterfinals of the Euros for the first time?
Yeah, it would be a really special moment for football history in Austria. But the most important thing is to just focus on the 90 minutes or perhaps 120. So it's all about the game. It's not about what's going to happen afterwards.
Attacking midfielder Christoph Baumgartner speaking to our reporter James Thorogood. We'll see if he comes back in to the 11, or will it be as well in attack, Greg Rich or Marko Anatovic, a national team legend who starts up front?
Yeah, options for Ralf Rangnick. Let's go inside the Turkey camp now, though, and speak to our reporter Aydin Güvenar, who is in Leipzig. Good evening.
Good evening, Chris.
So you've just been speaking to Vincenzo Montella. What's he been saying ahead of this game?
Coach Montella's pretty much press conference has just ended now. Likewise, in previous game and also after Portugal game, he said same speech, similarly same speech. Turkey should not let their emotions. Also about friendly game on March. And Austria is very compact and collective team. They make transition offense very well, very organized. So we will take precautions according to this.
How will the team replace the suspended Hakan Çalhanoğlu?
Yeah, as we observed, İsmail Yüksek, Fenerbahçe midfielder, came from injury, played last game. Orkun Kökçü was substitute, and also Kaan Ayhan was substitute. But this time, probably İsmail Yüksek, Kaan Ayhan, and Orkun Kökçü can play together, but there is also possibility that İrfancan Kahveci, who also lack of physical condition because of injury, but he couldn't play any games until now, but he's keeping the ball, he's playing character is keeping the ball, passing like Hakan Çalhanoğlu, maybe he can also start with him, but it's little bit question mark now.
And how do you think Turkey will play in this game? Will they be attacking or will they try and be a bit more defensive?
The coach also mentioned the statistics in group stage in the press conference that Turkey have 53% of ball possession in the group stage and created 161 possible attacking positions, ranking fifth in the tournament. Average approximately 17 shots per game. Turkey's playing character is keeping the ball possession, make passes. I guess they will continue to try to get the ball, make much passes with their youngsters like Kenan Yıldız, Arda Güler, and also Barış Alper Yılmaz. Turkey will try to create some attacking positions after keeping the ball possession. So not likewise, I can say much attacking style, but they will play controlled, but try to keep the ball on themselves, definitely.
Brilliant stuff, Aydin. Thank you very much for coming on, and good luck to Turkey tomorrow.
You're welcome, Rob and Chris. Thank you, and have a good evening.
Our reporter, Aydin Güvenir there. So 9 p.m. local time in Leipzig tomorrow. Turkey against Austria, the final last 16 tie.
That's right. And a reminder that on Monday, France and Portugal booked their way into the quarterfinals to set up a repeat of the Euro 2016 final, where, of course, there was extra time drama.
Here comes Ede. Not got much help. Oh, he doesn't need any help. How about that? The striker who rarely scores has scored maybe the biggest goal in the history of the Portugal national team.
And so it proved to be. Eder, the unlikely match winner against the hosts in that final in the Stade de France. And you imagine the tie, that game, that final will come up in all the pre-match interviews. But Kev, first of all, that'll be a brilliant quarterfinal.
I thought this was going to be the final, I must admit, before the tournament even started. I thought we could have seen France against Portugal in the final. So it's a terrific game to have in a quarterfinal. I think it'll be tight. I think it'll be down to who's more clinical in the game. And I think what's really interesting about it is that Roberto Martinez will look at this Slovenia performance, will go away with a few things to think about, and where he goes from there in terms of personnel decisions, tactical decisions, will have a huge bearing on how they perform, I think. So he's got some questions to wrestle with. Didier Deschamps, we know generally how he's going to set up and how he's going to play, but there is so much attacking talent between the two teams. But I do think it's going to be really tight. I think it's fascinating. Brilliant, brilliant quarterfinal.
And that is on the same day as Spain-Germany. That is, I mean, in terms of quarterfinal days, this Friday, Spain-Germany followed by Portugal-France.
You could have seen that as a kind of semi-final
definitely,
lineup.
Definitely.
So it should be brilliant drama. Let's quickly reflect on a disappointing night in the end for Slovenia and hear from their defender, Jakub Biol, who's been reflecting positively on a special evening for his country.
If you live for like moments like this with your fans, with your team, that you spend so much time together, that you have so good connections, and this is the point of everything. I told them like at the end now when we shoot penalties that we have to enjoy it, that we have to take everything in, like the atmosphere and everything, and what will happen, of course, at the end it didn't go our way, but it was an amazing evening.
Yeah, so Slovenia, a reminder, if you're joining us late in the show, beaten on penalties, and I doubt it'll be the last time we see penalty kicks in this tournament. In terms of France and Portugal, quickly going back to that tie, Kev, who do you see going through? Who's the better team right now between
France.
Those two?
France. Yeah. I backed them from the start, so I've got to stick with them. And I do just think that firepower they've got, that ability to change the game with the substitute, is going to make all the difference.
They'll have to get beyond Diego Costa, though, which, given how he played in the last 16, is going to be some doing. What a day it's been at Euro. Thank you for listening. And remember, you can listen to us every match night throughout the knockouts, just moments after the conclusion of the final game. If it goes to extra time or penalties, we'll be on a bit later, but the drama will have increased. And this show also available as the official podcast.
So one more night of the last 16. And on Tuesday, Romania, the Netherlands, Austria and Turkey will look to join the six nations that have already secured their quarterfinal spot at UEFA Euro 2024. We'll be back to review it all. My thanks to Chris and Kev as well alongside me, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the official Euro 2024 podcast, an IMG production for UEFA.